Bree, are you there?
Hi, Mike. Good morning. Can you hear me?
I hear you loud and clear. Can you hear moi?
I can.
Oh, good.
I can, sir.
So, tell me all about, by the by, Bree writes for 1 Peter 5. She writes for LifeSite News. She wrote the other day, there's two articles I want to talk to you about. The first one, we'll talk about the sex abuse whistleblower, which I believe is Siobhan. Is that it?
Yes, Siobhan. It's an Irish name. Yes, Siobhan O'Connor.
Okay. What a great Irish name, huh? Siobhan O'Connor, yes. Lad. we'll talk about this story. Then the other one that you had the other day at LifeSite News about the 4D video of the baby, the gestating baby that's going to be showed in Times Square, right?
Yes. Focus on the Family, yes.
Focus on the Family. And now if only we can drag Governor of New Tenochtitlan, Governor Andrew Cuomo Quattle down there, and get him to take a gander at it. We might actually get somewhere.
Yeah. Hopefully. Maybe we'll have the chance to be able to see him kind of drag down there, and perhaps Cardinal Dolan as well, just as a reminder that that is a real child, a preborn child in the womb, hopefully. Knock on wood, there'll be a lot of individuals who are interested in seeing what a child looks like in the womb before it's born. So knock on wood, we'll have some good response out there in May.
Now, I haven't seen the 4D video, even though you linked to it. I didn't take the time to look at it. Can you explain the difference between 3D and 4D?
You know, I'm not 100% sure. I think it's just the way that how clear it is. You know, like how when you're live streaming video, right? And you see 180p versus like 750p. I think it's just the quality is extremely good. And I think you have seen those pictures that have been done by very detailed ultrasounds of babies in the past, where you can literally see the baby's face. You could see everything in the womb there. You could see the baby's hands, and it's live. And so I think that's the element that is brought in. Of course, people are free to correct me on that. But I think the element is that it's live. It's being done live, and you're seeing the baby moving live. You're seeing the baby's facial expressions live, and that's where that image comes from.
Yeah, and then I did this story about 3 months ago. My friend K.V. Turley, the writer, he had written a story about the scientist. I think he was an obstetrician. He had taken these famous photos. You may remember them from Life magazine in the early 1960s. Where we had gotten the first photographic look inside a placenta.
Yeah.
And this for the first time, and these were in color. That was another thing that was big. We were in color, and they were the first looks inside the placenta. And the amazing thing about them, and this is one of the things that I don't think I'll ever forget from seeing when my children were gestating. And it's a great argument against the evolutionists saying, well, it just kind of happens. What do you mean? You mean that fuzzy hair that covers all babies, and then when they come out, it just disappears? That fuzzy hair, I can't remember the name of it. That fuzzy hair just happened?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Today I had actually posted a link to that particular article from LifeSite on Fox News, as Fox News actually ran a piece that referenced that, as well as the Daily Wire. And I had been on their Facebook site and thanked them for running it, because it needs to be known, widespread known, that this is happening, and that, you know, a Christian coalition is coming together. All non-denominations are coming together and really focusing on you know, life as being precious. And I think the catalyst behind that was definitely the horrendous you know, legal acts. I would call them illegal just by the nature of what they do, but the legal acts signed by Cuomo and celebrated by individuals who believe in abortion and killing the preborn child. It was really interesting to see the reaction that I received, the first reaction that I received, and I'm very grateful for Father Stephen and Barado to coming on as well and witnessing to this individual. But this individual is literally claiming that they were Christian, but that the killing of a child is between the mother and God and not anyone else. And it baffles me, number one, because scientifically, from the moment of conception, the fetus or the baby, it's, you know, fetus just being the Latin term, has a totally separate DNA from the mother. So for someone to say my body, my rights, well, that's great. It was your body and your rights up to the point that you conceived a child, and now it's your body and the child's body and both of your rights. So, you know, going back and saying, okay, well, scientifically, this is the case. So either killing that individual being inside your body is murder or it's not. And if it's murder, the entire world should be absolutely up in arms on this. If it's not, then there's no leg to stand on scientifically to suggest that you can't kill a child outside the womb, or, you know, your neighbor or someone who you don't like, or, you know, where's the line drawn if that's the case? Because they're individual people with individual rights. So I found it really interesting because that seems to be the case with many people to talk about the logic behind abortion or the illogic.
Illogic, not logic.
Yeah, the illogic behind the murdering of a child in the womb, you start to see that it is very emotional based. And so when you hear that women having, you know, I think it's 3 out of 4 women or 3 out of 5 women who see an ultrasound of their child in their womb will choose life. That says that there has been an infiltration of indoctrination taking place in education, in culture, that really needs to be combated with the cold hard facts. And so I think this beautiful idea of a 4D ultrasound just being blasted in one of the most busy places in New York City is a good answer to the issue.
I was going to say New York City. Yep, get a rope.
Yep. Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
If you're just joining us, Bree Dale, what do I assign you to? LifeSite News, 1 Peter 5, independent journalist? What are you?
You can call me an independent journalist, a new media journalist. I've done new media with many conservative outlets. And being Catholic, I also see the war that's going on in the Catholic Church right now, and many people not really understanding that, the difference between people and, the 2,000 years of faith. And so I have felt the call for the last year and really, you know, opportunities arising to not only to write but to speak to whoever's willing to listen and engage and really try to defend the faith and reaffirm the faith while going completely after those who are seeking to change it for their own gain.
And you want, and if any of you had any wonder, or if you were out there going, where does Mike find someone like Ms. Dale? It seems that people that think like I do just tend to find other wackos that think the same way.
It is funny though, Mike, that takes place. I mean, some people would call that
providential. It's providential.
Yes, exactly. Providence is definitely bringing us together.
I want to read you something from Ed Fesser. You probably read Ed Fesser from time to time.
He
was responding to something that Ramesh Ponnaru, who used to be the editor of the National Review, I know he's still in some editorial capacity. I think Rich Lowry is the babysitter of William F. Buckley's baby these days, which has seen its finer days for certain. Fesser wrote this. I had this in yesterday's pile of prep. I didn't get to it, but it applies exactly to what you just said, Bree. Yesterday at the corner, Ramesh Ponnaru responded to a reader who criticizes opponents of abortion who express special outrage at late-term abortions. If all direct abortion amounts to murder, the reader says, then it's only a cynical political tactic to speak of late-term abortions as if they were especially odious. I more or less agree with Ponnaru's reply to this, but I would add a clarification and a qualification. Here's the clarification. This is Ed Fesser writing this. Ponnaru says that late-term abortions are worse, not because an embryo doesn't have the same right to life that an 8-month-old fetus does, but rather because people have less excuse for misunderstanding the moral status of an 8-month-old fetus unless you're Hillary, than they do for misunderstanding the moral status of a human embryo, so that it shows a deeper corruption of conscience to approve of aborting the 8-month-old fetus. In other words, people are making a distinction. So I, unless you're talking about something that, unless we're describing a part of the pregnancy process, first trimester, second trimester, third trimester, there is no need for anyone that's pro-life to distinguish first trimester, third trimester. Stop doing it. And that's what Bree just said. And that's what I say. And that's what anyone that's really, quote, pro-life, close quote, ought to be saying. There is no distinction. There is no distinction. You mentioned that fetus is simply, this is the Latin term for baby. Okay, let's play St. Thomas Aquinas games for a moment. How do I know that it's a baby? I know it by its nature, by its essence. I look at it and I say baby, human baby, correct?
Yep.
Okay. How do I, now, when it's 8 weeks old and it's gestating in its mother, show me the photograph from the placenta cam or the electron microscope or whatever it is at the 4D, however it is that you find that you get the photograph. Now, I'm looking at something that kind of looks by its substance and physical nature. It kind of looks like a baby, but it's not a baby at that stage. You could mischaracterize it. You could be shown a fetus of a cow or something at a similar age. And I'm not saying that they look the same, but you could be mistaken. So the nature argument doesn't work in 8 weeks. Would you agree?
Yeah, the thing is too, Mike, is that when it comes down to this, I think, and it's also the situation, it's a good bridge between the sex abuse crisis in the church and what we're seeing in this lie that's perpetuated, right? When you're teaching a child not to steal, right?
Right.
And a child steals, something out of the cookie jar, right? And they have crumbs all over them. You'll see very quickly that that child will likely make an excuse to be able to have that cookie, right? If they're sharp enough, if they've learned that just saying no is not going to cut it, that they start to lie to themselves and they lie to you to see if they can get away with it. When it comes to abortion, or even going to the article I wrote with Siobhan O'Connor, one of the things that really kind of blows my mind is that the Pope himself said, quote, some bishops did not understand well the need to become aware what is an abused boy and what is an abused girl. And we've been hearing this in the summit itself, where people, individuals like Cardinal Tagle or Cardinal Supich have come out and saying, we really need to reach out and touch and heal these abused people, where it's like, okay, you don't want to use that language, number one, right now, to those who have been abused by priests, but also this whole idea of like entering into the pain, and not really understanding and needing to have more synodality and more focus on, rhetoric.
Oh,
right?
Please.
Right? And that there's that same kind of rhetoric. And again, it's the leftist tactics of explaining away a decision that is really centered on self. So if you take a look at those who are trying to address the abuse crisis by putting a Band-Aid on it or talking about it instead, or trying to go and have I think Cardinal Supich said something to the effect of yesterday, having like a serious listening, like really, I mean, listening.
That's what he said, serious listening. That's what he said.
Almost in even stronger terms than that, listening sessions. And that was also something that was brought up multiple times, listening sessions. Action needs to be taken. And it's the same thing with the people who are looking at terminating or killing their preborn child. There's a time to listen, and then there's a time to act, and the act is a show of mercy, and that action is, right now, as we're seeing that 4D ultrasound, look at your baby. Look at your baby.
Yeah, look at the baby. Bree Dale is a journalist, an investigative journalist, a blogger, and appears on multimedia shows, television and radio, and is on our Skype Maker hotline. A quick note on that. A friend in the chat room at mikechurch.com/chat says, Mike, how about this one? Let's stop touching our parishioners and focus on getting them to heaven. What? Maybe you just get stupid to say that. We'd all be like, hey, that was great. I want to go back to the nature argument because there was a part B of that. Okay. So the nature, I know by the substance. I know it's a human. 8 weeks, I may not know it by the substance. I may not know that it's a human. What we had to do, though, as people that cherish life and aren't going to violate God's commandment, what we have to do here, and again, I'm going to go back to St. Thomas, is when we know something by its nature, we also have to know that by its nature, every human has a soul, okay? When you're alive, you are, and that's why the soul in Latin is animas. Animas, that's where we get the term animate from. It's moving. It has life. The soul is the, as Brother Francis says, the principle of life in a living thing. That's what a soul is. A human soul is unique. It is unlike an animal soul. Yes, animals have souls that animate their bodies. No, they don't pass on to cows and then go to heaven. An animal soul animates the animal. Simple as that. When it's done, it's done. There is no there. But a human soul, we know this from Scripture, and we know this from the teaching of the church. A human soul is unique, and every single one of them is precious to God. So if we're actually correct in living the faith and in being good Christians, you know, good Catholics, then we must know that the difference between the 8-week-old and the 8-month-old is not one of substance in the same way that Bree is a female, I'm a male. Bree is, I'm going to guess, 5'4". I'm 5'11 and a half. There's a difference in substance there, in matter. Are we both humans? Yes, we are. Now, let's talk about the dead guy that's lying in a coffin. Oh, look, it's Uncle Bobo. He died a week ago. His funeral is today. He's got an open casket. Now, I see what looks to be, by its nature, a human. But wait a minute. It can't move. It can't talk. It doesn't have any of the functions, the 26 powers that a human being has. So at this point in time, even though it was formerly a live human being, now it is obviously it's dead. But what's missing? The soul. That's what's missing. Four final things: death, judgment, heaven, hell. This is how you win the life argument, Miss Dale. There is no material difference, speaking of the nature of a soul, there is no difference whatsoever from an 8-day-old concepted child and an 8-month-old gestating child. No difference whatsoever. You make that argument, then there is no argument for abortion at any stage. There simply isn't. And this has been the mistake that pro-lifers have made in making their common cause with the Republican Party, and not making the common cause with God and with if there's nature, that suggests a creator. Then there's supernature, supernatural. And that's where we failed. So I just wanted to finish the argument. I wasn't done with the St. Thomas Aquinas argument.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, I think it's a lot of people just don't understand the idea of, you know, having the substantial and the accidents. And one of the things that I've learned specifically is that even if a child, you know, very early in the development process doesn't look like a human being, that's because the accidents are there. You know, the accident. So, for example, if you have an orange, right, and you've got an orange hanging on a tree and it's green, right, it's still, and it we recognize it as an orange. It's just not yet.
It's not orange, right? Color yet, but it's still an orange.
It's still, so what is it that makes the orange the orange? It's oranginess, and that's the substance. The accidents are, hey, the color, the smell, you know, how big it is, all of that kind of thing. And when people recognize that and say, okay, there's a foundational understanding of substance, and we can bring it to the soul, but if there, we, being that we live in a post-Christian nation, and culture in general, we can bring it to science as well. And then you can take it to science and say, well, what makes a separate being individual? And you can say DNA, right?
Yep.
And so when you say that the DNA from the moment of conception is separate than that of the mother, there is no other argument. So again, it goes back to the pro-abortion crowd really playing on the emotionality. I mean, really, you hear about it. Well, what if, you know, this individual was raped or the life of the mother? And we've heard over and over again that that's just, there is, with the rape situation, it is a horrible situation. But it doesn't mean that that child, that substance, that individual person having been conceived is at fault for that absolute horrendous
act. I haven't heard it put that way, Bree, but it's a brilliant distinction there it's my body, my choice. Well, it's not your body anymore.
Yeah.
There's separate DNA there now. It's not your body.
Yeah, and that's where the legal questioning has to come in, because there are times that that judges have ruled in this country that if a mother is killed by someone, a mother who is pregnant at the time is killed by someone, even in 9/11, the unborn child of one of the victims of 9/11 is recognized at the 9/11 memorial. So either the child is a child, and either that individual is recognized as a person. The person clause, I think, is a necessary thing. Our president right now could sign into executive action, executive order, to recognize personality as at the moment DNA is different to the point of natural death. He can actually sign in as a declaration that personhood starts. Being an American citizen starts here in this country from the moment DNA is separate from the mother.
Brilliant distinction. Bree Dale is an investigative journalist, a blogger, and a media contributor, and is on our Dude Maker Skype line here on the Mike Church Show on the Crusade Channel on a free phone Friday. Our chat room is open and hopping right now. 38 chatters in there. Go join us, mikechurch.com/chat. Now, Bree has a essay out, or an interview, actually, with Siobhan O'Connor. Now, I was supposed to interview Siobhan back in the day in November, around the time of the Baltimore Silence Stops Now rally, and she had to cancel for some reason, but you were actually able to sit down with her. What did she tell you, and who is Ms. Siobhan O'Connor?
So I'm blessed to have known Siobhan when I went to Christendom College with her back in the day. And we got to know each other, actually, as a side note, when Father Groeschel out in New York at the time, he had come to visit Christendom during the summer during an institute, and we were there working. And he had missed his flight, and so he needed to be driven from Christendom College in Front Royal, Virginia, all the way to Franciscan University of Steubenville, Ohio. And so Siobhan and I happily volunteered in that, and it was, you know, about a 10-hour trip.
10 hours?
Yeah, about that, you know, from, you know, round trip for us, but to be able to take Father Groeschel and another Franciscan over there and to talk to this very saintly man was just such a blessing for us, and we had some really good fun times too. But Siobhan is probably one of the most kind, charitable, sweet-tempered individual you could ever meet. She's very honest. She believes in justice. And what has happened to her? I would call her a reluctant whistleblower, because she truly loves those who she worked for, including the bishop. But she also saw the injustice taking place, and she could not stand for that. And so it was incredibly painful for her to have to bring this to the public because they weren't acting on it. And she saw this injustice taking place. And so I reached out to her a few months ago and I said, hey, I'd like to interview you. And I did so for LifeSite News, you know, initially just talking about, you know, her experience and also the plans for the upcoming summit. But I reached out to her again for 1 Peter 5 because this particular, you know, the what has led up to the summit has been some very disturbing trends, including words from Pope Francis and others that have really made this very difficult for individuals who are seeking justice. And so I want Siobhan. Siobhan has become kind of the face of many of those who have had to silently or behind the scenes stand up for having been abused. She's been able to come out and actually say, okay, these are some of the things we need to address.
Okay.
And some very, very serious, you know, concerns that she has, including some of the concerns that now have been expressed by the press. And I'll let you kind of go into that because I know that you've read through this. But Siobhan is an incredible, incredible witness to what laymen are expected to do in cases of injustice in the church. We have to stand up for the truth.
So what is this cannot be the Catholic response? Is she referring to the sterile clinical response that Cardinal Supich gave Diane Montagna in LifeSite News yesterday? Well, we have studies from back in 2003. He didn't. I wonder if he even knows that the John Jay study is 16 years old. He starts citing statistics and, we know this percentage and this, and what we're trying to do is this and that and the other. I didn't hear the word soul one time. Did you?
Yeah, I mean, the lack, the church's, and it's not the church, it's members of the church hierarchy who seem to have this apathetic approach towards actual, you know, actual workings, actual solutions to problems. You know, see, you know, Mike, my background, having been in the military, I was a military officer, a naval surface warfare officer. When I was a junior officer, if I had recognized a problem and I went to my superior officer with the problem without actionable solutions, I would have been reamed over the coal. We don't have time for that, you know, and we are in a similar high-risk situation right now. We are risking, we being the church, are risking the salvation of souls right now, the loss of souls right now, simply because we want to talk about synodality. And one of the things that I brought up in my interview with Siobhan was, look, we talk about protocols. Cardinal Supich came out with a 10-step or 12-step solution to this situation, including, you know, listening, intense
personal
listening, and all this kind of thing.
Yes, let's have a listening session.
And, you know, when I ask her, feelings and pain and all this kind of stuff.
How about we stop diddling children? How about that?
No.
While
and,
we're
and,
listening.
You know, no. And she said, not only and that, what other Siobhan said was that, you know, the church is not suffering from a dearth of protocols in 2002.
It's suffering from a lack of,
even though, you know, McCarrick was involved with the Dallas Charter that actually conveniently kept any kind of responsibility, you know, to hold bishops accountable. It was just about laymen and priests. And frankly, I mean, I don't know if you've had to sit through, you know, death by PowerPoint and whatnot, but a lot of
death
these,
by PowerPoint.
But you think about it, like a lot of these protocols that they put in place in the Dallas Charter, literally is like, oh, we're going to talk about why you shouldn't touch children. Well, I don't know about you, but logic and reason would say that these people who are criminals and predators aren't going to be swayed by death by PowerPoint. What they are going to be swayed by is swift action. And unfortunately, we just see this perpetuation of abuse take place. These people are literally living their abuse again by this talk, but no action. And that's what she said. I mean, she said, it's much easier to talk about clericalism as though the church has the flu, but the church has cancer. And I think that's really important for people to understand.
Well, Bree, let me give you a protocol. When Supich and the other ones, when they say, well, we need to have different protocols. We need to have this. We need to change the rules. We need to do this. I'll give you a protocol. Are you ready?
Yes.
Quote. But he that shall scandalize one of these little ones that believe in me, it were better for him that a millstone should be hanged about his neck and that he should be drowned in the depth of the sea. Matthew 6:18-6. That's a protocol. I don't need another one. There you go, right there. It's a little one. He believes in Jesus, believes in God, believes in the faith, believes in the church. That's why he's going to put the vestments on to serve at Mass. He believes. Don't touch him. There's your protocol right there, Bishop.
True, but you again, it's like what she said. There's a lack of supernatural faith, personal holiness, sure, and faithful courage, which you spoke about actually, about this like multi-tiered infiltration in culture after World War II. We did see that happen in the church. It's actually a brilliant tactical approach if you think about it. It's 60-year long game that these individuals have played, and they've done it in such a way that I look at it as a military veteran and I say, okay, I see military tactics here. That's why I'm so convinced that this communist infiltration is real. Because
So you see military tactics?
It's 100% military. I was actually talking to a priest the other day who is being red-pilled about this. He sees through all of this, but he still has a hard time understanding, how is it that these individuals have been, like, you know, 70% of the clerics today have been indoctrinated in this way or have ascribed to this.
Sure,
how is it
sure.
that they've kept it quiet? How is it? And my first point would be they haven't, because their Achilles heel of immorality has popped up, which, I mean, that was also known within the communist movement. But I also think, and the monetary corruption, which is a whole nother conversation that we can have. But I think where it is that there is something called in the military compartmentalization, right? So when you have an order that you give to your, let's say you're a captain of a ship, right? You know the full scope of the operations that you're going to be involved with, right? But there's something called need to know. And there's a reason for need to know. You don't need to allow your very junior people to know all the intricacies of the operation. They just need to know their part in it and what they're supposed to do. And so you give them orders and they obey them. And that needs to be looked at when it comes to how these individuals who infiltrated the church through Belladonna and others, 11,000 seminarians who were very well versed in the communist movement back then, they were ideologically completely ascribed to it. They did not believe in the faith. They knew that what their mission was, and their mission was obtain positions of power and authority in order to promote from within. That was their mission. And it's a brilliant tactical approach. You would do that if you were trying to take over from within a culture. You would do communications operations, which we're seeing in the Vatican now, you know, this centralization of the Vatican communications dicastery. It's so funny that I was talking with someone very well in the know about this book that came out yesterday in the Vatican, inside the Vatican closet. Or inside the closet.
Frederick Martel.
Martel, yeah. Sociologist, and very much full of just the drama that you would expect, and innuendo that you would expect, and, you know, mixed with truth and lies. But this individual who's in the media said, well, I just can't see this being, I mean, it's so intricate, a detail of, you know, communications operations or what we call PSYOP, psychological operations being done by the Vatican dicastery. You give them too much credit. And I'm like, actually, it's not hard to do. We see it happening all the time. And it is definitely something that is very much connected, because this individual, Martel, was in contact with some of the worst actors in the Vatican, like well before this came out, including Monsignor Battista Rica of the Who Am I to Judge question. He is a bad actor, and he's very close to where the Pope is. I mean, he even runs the Pope's household. And this individual was recognized in the Vatican as, and I talked about this the other day, recognized as having had multiple illicit homosexual relationships, including with very close to being underage or underage male prostitutes in Rome. And he was known about that. And when the Pope appointed him as kind of his eyes and ears to the Vatican Bank, there you go again, look at the connections with the money trail. But also as in charge of his papal household at Santa Marta.
What are the initials for the Vatican Bank again, Bree?
Oh, I don't remember. I know that you and I both have been briefed on that before, but I'm not.
I'm trying to remember because when you said Vatican Bank, there's folks, there's stuff you don't know. You probably don't want to know, but when she said Vatican Bank, Vatican Bank is a scandal in and of itself. And there's so many. Bree and I could talk for another four hours, and the debriefing wouldn't be complete. But Bree, I gotta go. I gotta end the segment.
Yeah.
I want to read your conclusion of your interview with Shaban, and this is what you concluded. Appealing once again to the Pope and members of the hierarchy involved in this week's summit, Ms. O'Connor pleaded, quote, "You have spoken of deflated expectations, but it is our hearts and souls that are most deflated. Please do not allow this summit to be one of awareness, protocols, and PR sound bites. It must be a time of action, accountability, and atonement. Nothing else is acceptable." Close quote. Shaban O'Connor, quoted by Bree Dale, 1peter5.com. Bree, we're 2 days now in, 30 hours into the summit. You believe from what you have seen thus far. Tell our audience, is Ms. Shaban O'Connor going to be disappointed?
I think so. I honestly think
Thus far, is she disappointed? Thus far.
Yes, of course. Yes, because action has, there's been a lot of talk about different rhetoric coming out of the Vatican, but no action. And frankly, I'll be honest with you at this point. I think people are starting to be red-pilled, even in the secular press. And you could see, I've written another article. Well, I think at the beginning of this article, actually, I point out that CNN had a, right at the beginning, the presser on Monday, had a reporter ask some pretty poignant questions that were, you know, sidestepped.
CNN's Delia Gallagher asked Supich a question, Cardinal Supich a question.
Yeah, and so Cardinal Supich's answer really was, he said, you know, well, could this whole thing be wrapped up in, you know, in connection with this homosexual network? And Supich literally said, this was a hypothesis, and it needs to stay there at a hypothesis. And I think when people hear something like that in the secular press, they know this is not going to be addressed. And it is time for us to call for accountability. And if it means by going to the courts, as Christ himself had admonished, if you go to your brother and he does not change, you bring another witness with you, if he still doesn't listen, you go to the authorities and you take it up there. And we are at that point, and I think the authorities are already engaged. I mean, we saw just recently, and we did hear of reports coming from the AG in Michigan. There are AGs now working across the United States investigating human trafficking and trafficking in persons and whatnot. So I think it's just going to be a matter of time for this clean out. Unfortunately, the church was not able to police itself because many of the individuals were involved and still are involved with that. So, yeah. Follow the money, I think.
Follow the money is one thing. I would also just add, Brother Andre Marie was on the show on Wednesday, and I can't get into what's going on with Brother in the St. Benedict Center and these precepts that have been waged, these scandals that have been waged against them. Our Lady's Immaculate Heart will triumph ultimately, and justice will be served, we all believe, as we pray for the brothers and the sisters at the St. Benedict Center. But Brother made a very, very profound point that I want you to hear and the audience to hear in case you didn't hear it Wednesday. And we need to exercise just a bit of caution here. And Brother said, you have to be very careful, Mike, in some of the things that you wish for to happen publicly in regards to the sexual abuse scandals of priests and bishops. And he said, the reason you have to be is because if there's one thing that the Holy Roman Catholic Church has, and she is a perfect society, the state and the church, two perfect societies, she has everything within her to sustain herself, and she can do her own policing, she can do her own trials, etc. This is not well known enough, and I didn't know about it until Brother explained it on Wednesday, and I said, you know what, Brother, I'm going to make it my duty to inform people. Just like the Covington Catholic High School boys and now Jesse Smollett have the presumption of innocence, right, until they actually get their day. We call this, they get the day in court. We call this due process. The Vatican and the Holy Roman Catholic Church also have a canonical, very, very detailed and very proficient due process for these charges against these priests. Now, that doesn't exonerate them when the state goes after them and when an AG makes the charge or when an authority makes the charge. Well, that's now in the secular realm and it's a little different. But we have to be very careful and be judicious about what we say about who may be guilty and who or suspicions of guilt simply because they are due the same presumption of innocence and due process. And what you ultimately hope, Bree, is that Pope Pius XIII is ultimately elected and these trials are actually held in the Vatican, right?
Yeah, I mean, and at the end of the day, you know, at the end of the day, you have to also understand that he who is judge in this, in canon law, is also the bishop. He makes the final decision,
sure.
And it can then be appealed to the Vatican. I think where we have to have caution, of course, is to lump in the innocent with the guilty, and that's where evidence
right.
is going to have to be a play. But, however, you know, there have been many innocent priests who have been convicted by their bishops because they've spoken out, and we've seen that happen as well. So, you know, for you know, nothing, they've just been silenced, and there are many who have been silenced in this way. So we have to, you know, there isn't an aspect of accountability, but unfortunately, for most people who are Catholics, either you don't have they just don't have the knowledge of what's going on in the church. They have a blind understanding of obedience to the Pope, you know, which is quite Jesuitical. If you understand where that comes from, it's not Catholic to say blind obedience is a good thing. You know, that can be applied to those who take vows of obedience, but logic and reason is part of the Catholic Church, as you brought St. Thomas in earlier, you know, utilizing your brain to look at facts and choosing the good.
Wait a minute. I have a brain? You're
yeah.
kidding me. Hey, folks, yeah. She is Bree Dale. I hope you'll come back and visit with us again.
Yes, of course.
It was very enlightening. Gosh, what a lightning rod and a firecracker you are. Read Bree at lifesitenews.com. You can read Bree at 1 Peter 5. You can follow her on Twitter. She is at Bree Dale, not hard to find. On Facebook, the same if you're a Facebooker. And Bree, we certainly appreciate your time here on a Friday morning. Gosh, as I said, I could keep you here till noon.